Ever find yourself wondering about the point where a journalist's investigation bumps up against a public official's expectation of privacy? Today, we're diving deep into God Be Here v. Mixed Newspapers, a really interesting Arizona Supreme Court case that drew some key lines in that sand.
Exactly. And what's central here is this idea of false light invasion of privacy. You've likely encountered defamation, which deals with, you know, harm to someone's reputation.
Right.
False light is related but distinct. It focuses more on the emotional distress caused by being publicly portrayed in a way that's false and highly offensive.
Okay.
The crucial question God Be Here addresses for you as future legal minds is, how does this legal concept apply when the individual in question is a public official acting in their official capacity?
Precisely. We've pulled together a solid collection of resources to help us unpack this. We've got analysis of God Be Here from legal commentary, a detailed rundown of the case itself, and a standard case brief. Our goal is to extract the essential insights to give you a clear understanding of this important area of law. So let's start by looking at who the key players were and what kicked off this whole legal process.
Okay. So the case involves Richard G. God Be Here, who was the sheriff of Maricopa County at the time, along with several of his deputies and even some civilian staff from the sheriff's office.
A whole group then?
Yeah, quite a few plaintiffs. They brought the suit against Phoenix Newspapers, Inc., the publisher of the Arizona Republic and Phoenix Gazette. Plus, 14 editors and reporters were also named as defendants.
14. Wow. And this all stemmed from a significant number of articles, right? We're talking about more than 50 that appeared in the papers during the spring and summer of 1985.
That's right, over 50.
What were the core allegations in these articles?
Well, the articles presented a fairly damning picture. They accused Sheriff God Be Here and his department of various forms of misconduct, including things like staging narcotics arrests purely for publicity purposes.
Ah, the publicity angle.
Yeah, and misusing public funds and resources, engaging in acts of police brutality, and generally sort of failing to meet their professional responsibilities.
Now, this is a really critical point to understand, isn't it? These accusations were all directed at their actions and performance in their official roles as law enforcement officers.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't about their private lives or personal conduct.
Exactly. That distinction is going to be really important when we get into the Supreme Court's reasoning. So as a result of these publications, God Be Here and the other plaintiffs filed a lawsuit. It included claims for both libel alleging damage to their reputations from false statements and false light invasion of privacy, claiming they suffered emotional harm from being portrayed falsely in the public sphere.
Right, so two separate but related legal claims. And it's worth remembering that false light isn't solely about a damaged reputation. It's about the distress caused by the offensive and untrue portrayal itself.
Correct. It's a false portrayal that's offensive.
Okay, so the case goes to trial. What was the initial outcome there?
Well, at the trial court level, the judge actually dismissed the false light invasion of privacy claims very early on.
Really? Why?
The judge's reasoning was a bit off track, really. They said the actions described in the articles, even if proven false, didn't reach the level of being sufficiently outrageous, which is a standard more aligned with a different tort, intentional infliction of emotional distress, or IID.
Ah, so applying the IID standard to a false light claim, that seems wrong.
Yeah, it was incorrect.
Yeah.
The trial court essentially applied the wrong legal standard for false light.
And that didn't sit well with the plaintiffs, I imagine, so they took it to the next level, right?
They did. The case then went to the Arizona Court of Appeals, and surprisingly, they agreed with the trial court's initial dismissal of the false light claims.
They agreed, using the same faulty reasoning.
It seems so. They also seem to lean towards this outrageous conduct standard, which just further, you know, muddied the waters around what false light actually meant in Arizona law.
So it looked like the false light claims were essentially dead at that point. But the Arizona Supreme Court then decided to get involved. What prompted them to take on this case?
Well, the Arizona Supreme Court recognized that there was significant uncertainty and, frankly, a real need to clarify the legal definition and application of false light in the state.
Okay, makes sense.
They specifically wanted to address two fundamental legal questions. First, should Arizona even formally recognize false light invasion of privacy as a distinct legal wrong separate from defamation and IIED?
A big question.
And second, if Arizona does recognize this tort, can public officials even bring a claim for false light based on matters related to their performance of their official duties?
All right, so the stage is set for the Arizona Supreme Court to step in and hopefully provide some much-needed clarity for the legal community. What did they ultimately decide?
They did provide clarity. The Arizona Supreme Court did indeed establish false light invasion of privacy as a recognized tort in Arizona. They explicitly adopted the framework outlined in the Restatement Second of Torts, specifically Section 652E.
Okay, so Arizona aligns itself with the states that recognize this cause of action. Now, for our listeners who might not have the restatement memorized, what are the essential elements that need to be proven to succeed on a false light claim under this standard?
There are three primary elements you need to hit. First, there must be publicity given to a matter concerning the plaintiff that places them before the public in a false light.
Okay, publicity plus falsity.
Second, that false light must be something that would be considered highly offensive to a reasonable person. Not just slightly annoying, but highly offensive.
Got it. Highly offensive.
And third, and this is crucial, the person or entity that published the information must have had knowledge of or acted with reckless disregard for the falsity of the matter and the false light in which the plaintiff would be placed.
The actual malice standard we hear about in defamation cases involving public figures.
Exactly. That's the standard required for this third element.
Right. That makes sense. Now, here's where it gets really interesting, particularly when we're talking about public officials like Sheriff Godbey here. What significant limitation did the court impose on their ability to bring false light claims?
This is the absolute core of the Godbey here ruling, the main takeaway. The Arizona Supreme Court specifically held that public officials cannot bring a false light claim for anything related to their public duties.
Wow. Cannot. That's a major carve out.
It is. A very significant restriction on this particular tort, specifically for individuals in public service.
So even if a publication prints something false and highly offensive about a public official's job performance, their ability to sue for false light is generally just off the table.
Generally, yes, concerning their official duties.
What was the court's underlying reasoning for imposing such a substantial limitation?
The court's reasoning fundamentally comes down to balancing competing interests. On one hand, you have the public's crucial right to scrutinize the actions of their elected and appointed officials. On the other, the individual official's right to privacy.
A classic balancing act.
Precisely. The court essentially stated that when someone chooses to enter public service, they inherently invite a greater degree of public examination. The public has a legitimate and, frankly, significant interest in receiving information, even critical information, about how public officials are carrying out their responsibilities.
So public scrutiny is paramount for public duties.
Right. Therefore, the court reasoned that this public interest overrides the official's privacy interest, specifically in the context of their official conduct. They concluded that even if a portrayal is false and offensive, it's constitutionally protected under the First Amendment's guarantee of free speech and a free press.
Unless.
Unless the public official can demonstrate that the publisher acted with that actual malice standard we just discussed, meaning they knew the information was false or recklessly disregarded whether it was true or not. And that, as you know, is a very high bar to meet.
It really is. That really underscored the inherent tension between the First Amendment and the right to privacy, especially for those in the public eye. So what the court is saying is that for public officials, when it comes to matters related to their official duties, the threshold for a successful false light claim is incredibly high, effectively requiring proof of intentional or reckless falsehood.
Exactly right. And it's important to circle back quickly to the distinction between false light and defamation again.
Okay.
While both involve untrue statements, remember, false light is concerned with the emotional harm resulting from a misleading portrayal. Defamation focuses specifically on damage to one's reputation.
Different harms, different focus.
And also, let's not forget that unlike intentional infliction of emotional distress, false light doesn't demand outrageous conduct, just that highly offensive falsehood coupled with that specific state of mind knowledge of falsity or reckless disregard.
Okay, so these distinctions are critical. To make this really tangible for our listeners, particularly those who might be future public officials or maybe work in journalism, what are the practical implications of this Godbey here ruling?
Okay, let's use a concrete example. Imagine a news outlet falsely reports that a city council member accepted bribes in action directly related to their public duties.
Right.
Clearly related, yes.
Under the precedent set by Godby here, that council member would likely not have a viable false light claim, even if the report causes them significant emotional distress. Their main legal recourse would likely be a defamation claim, where they'd need to prove reputational harm and that the publication acted with actual malice.
Okay, so libel might still be an option, but false light probably isn't.
Correct. However, let's change the facts slightly. If that same news outlet falsely reported that the city council member was secretly battling a serious illness, something generally considered within their private life.
Right, private matter.
Then a false light claim could potentially be successful. But, and it's a big but, the council member would still need to prove that the publication acted with knowledge of the falsity or with reckless disregard for the truth, that actual malice standard again, because they are a public official.
Ah, so even for private matters, a public official still faces the actual malice hurdle for false light. But the claim isn't automatically barred like it is for official duties.
Exactly. That really clarifies the crucial distinction between public duties and private life in this context. So for the media, this ruling offers a considerable degree of protection when reporting on the actions and performance of public officials in their official capacities.
Gives them breathing room, essentially.
Precisely. It provides the press with more freedom to investigate and report on public officials without the constant threat of false light lawsuits, provided, of course, they are not acting with actual malice. For public officials, well, it establishes a very significant hurdle for bringing a false light claim related to their professional lives. They essentially accept a certain level of intense public scrutiny, even if some of it contains inaccuracies that might be emotionally upsetting.
And for our audience of aspiring lawyers, this case really emphasizes the nuanced differences between these various privacy and reputational torts. It's not just a general concept of they said something untrue about me.
Not at all.
You have libel specifically for damage to reputation, false light for the emotional distress caused by a false portrayal, and then the separate tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress, which has that much higher bar of requiring truly outrageous conduct.
Yeah, exactly. Godby here stands as a really important illustration of how the courts attempt to balance these fundamental rights, the protection of individual privacy, and the constitutional guarantee of a free press, especially when the focus is on the actions of those who hold positions of public trust and power.
So Godby here is truly a foundational case for anyone seeking to understand the complexities of privacy law, particularly where public officials are involved. It really highlights the delicate balancing act that our legal system undertakes when considering freedom of the press and an individual's right to not be portrayed falsely in a way that is highly offensive.
Absolutely. And it leaves us with a really important question to consider, you know, moving forward. Given these limitations placed on public officials' ability to bring false light claims related to their public duties, how might this ruling ultimately shape the way the media chooses to cover those in power?
Good question.
And what broader implications does this have for accountability and transparency in our society? It's certainly a critical area to continue thinking about as you progress in your legal studies.
Definitely gives you a lot to think about. Thanks for taking this deep dive into this significant case with us.